Welcome to the Man Cave Podcast with Dan Casper.
First things first, Austin, how far did you have Kentucky going in your bracket?
I think I had him losing second round.
Second round? Oh, you're smart cookie then. I had him in the final four, so I'm a little... Ooh, yeah.
That'll happen.
I bought into a little bit of the Kentucky hype there, so no more for me for the future. Who do you got in your final four?
Geez, I'm going to have to remember. I have Purdue winning it. Okay. I think on the other side, I think it's Purdue-Houston in the finals.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember the other side. Those are in the finals. I can't remember my other two. But, I, you know what? I mean, I'm an analytics guy, so like I look and I have a hard time knocking off one and two seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So inevitably, my Elite Eight's like ones and twos. And you look back and it never happens, but I just, when I do predict upsets, they're always wrong. So
same here. It's always like I feel like this year was like, hey, it's going to be a lot of upsets. And then when I did mine, I'm like, I'm going to go all chalk. So
yeah,
that's how it works out.
That happens.
I want to start off this morning. You know, we got some pro days going on as we gear up for the NFL draft and such. And maybe one target, first round pick, Alabama corner Kool-Aid McKinstry. Love the name, by the way. But the other day at his pro day, he ran a 40. They clocked it at 4.47. But he has a Jones fracture in there too, and he still ran a 4.47. They said he'll have surgery today. Can you give us, I know we've talked about this before, but can you give us a little bit of a refresher on exactly what a Jones fracture is? And then the second part is, how impressive is that he ran a 4.47 40 with a Jones fracture?
Yeah, so first thing, a Jones fracture is a name for a fracture at the base of the fifth metatarsal. So the metatarsals are the foot that make up, or I'm sorry, the bones that make up the forefoot. So you have five of them, one linked to each toe. So it's on the fifth or the outside portion, and it's at the base of it. It's an area that's really problematic because the way that bone gets its blood supply, there's a couple different ways. One is what we call nutrient arteries. So those are the main arteries that flow right into the bone. And then often on the ends of the bone, around the joint and where tendons insert, there's blood supply there. So often there's what we call watershed areas where it's not really getting a good blood supply from the center portion and it's not really getting a good blood supply from the end. So it creates an area that doesn't have really good vascularity, meaning they're prone to not only injury because it just doesn't have the ability to heal itself, but when they do break, they're very difficult to get to heal correctly. So I don't know if his was a chronic one or his was an acute one. They can happen both ways, but in either event, they are hard to get to heal correctly. So they do often require a screw, especially in an athlete. If you see Jones fracture, usually our first recommendation is going to be to put a screw across that. And they have a pretty good success rate. And the list of athletes that have had Jones fractures is pretty darn long. But to answer the second question, how impressive is it? Yeah, I mean, it's a painful thing. I mean, that's why athletes get them fixed, because it hurts to run and jump. So I can tell you with a healthy foot, he's going to run faster than that. You know, how much exactly, that's obviously hard to say, but I can promise you it would impair. I mean, just simply the pain from pushing off, you know, you can try to fight through it, but the body's going to have some natural kind of protection and splinting of that. So, yeah, certainly an impressive for what is 4.47 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's going to stand out to a lot of people, I'm sure.
So how does that relate? Is it comparable to a Liz Frank injury?
So they're both in the foot. Liz Frank is a lot worse. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Liz Frank is potentially career ending. I mean, basically it's like a dislocation of your midfoot. And of course there's mild versions of it too. So you can have like a mild sprain of a Liz Frank joint, or you can have full disruption of it. And not to say that Jones fractures can't be a big problem. They can. I mean, if that bone doesn't heal, unfortunately, when we do put a screw, that doesn't work every time. Sometimes you have to come back and do bone grafting. And unfortunately, there are case reports of that not healing either. So those can be big time trouble as well, but that's much less common. So if I had to pick between the two, it's a Jones fracture all day.
So could there be for McKinstry potential for some future problems with the Jones fracture injury?
Well, if it heals correctly, not really.
Okay.
The most common issue then is going to be getting the screw taken out. So, you know, we see that, you know, not infrequently. Kevin Durant had one, and he had to get his screw taken back out later.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a prominent screw, and it's right where one of your peroneal tendons inserts on the base of the fifth metatarsal. So it's an area that can irritate that tendon. So it's not uncommon to have to go back in and take it out, but that's a relatively straightforward procedure. But then unfortunately it's rare, but occasionally then you'll refracture it after the screw comes out. So you can chase your tail a little bit on that one, but luckily it tends to do pretty well.
weird question, and this is pure speculation, but he's also a guy that was kind of getting mocked to some Packers. I mean, could it be possible he might be going to Green Bay for that foot surgery with the specialists over there too?
Well, he is certainly well known, and he operates on a ton of athletes, so that certainly would not be shocking. Mm-hmm. Bob Anderson is certainly a short list of foot and ankle surgeons in the U.S. if athletes are going to see him, so mm-hmm. it would not be surprising.
I want to ask about, I know we've talked a lot about Kirk Cousins and such, but I've been seeing some stuff like there's people asking, can he even be ready for the start of the regular season when it's coming up here? And I guess, I mean, maybe I'm a little bit, you know, I just assumed he would be, but is there a realistic chance that maybe Kirk Cousins actually wouldn't be ready by the start of the season in September, still recovering from that Achilles injury, do you think?
You know, I mean, I think he will be, but it's certainly something they'll have to watch. I mean, the recovery timeline for those, and I mean, you know, we beat that horse dead with the Aaron Rodgers mm-hmm. saga, shall we call it.
Yeah.
That was just outside any realm of possibility, essentially from the get-go. And so it created a whole bunch of hoopla and whatnot. But if you're looking at his time frame, I think getting back to this season, I think both those guys are going to be certainly ready to play. Will it affect the way he plays? Potentially. And, you know, their style of play at quarterback is just different than a receiver running back who may have a little bit harder time. Not so much because you're worried about the tendon re-rupturing, because the leg just isn't ready for it. There's still fatigue and weakness, and they just don't want to push it too fast and end up getting some other issue in the leg. But most of the time, you're going to let people get back roughly in that window, because at that point, not only is the tendon healed, but the leg has kind of been rehabbed and they're ready to go.
He's Dr. Crow inside the training room, Chippewa Valley Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, with us this morning. I'm going to ask you a question that Hudson asked me the other day, because this is in your wheelhouse. But he's like a diehard. He's into the NBA right now because it's basketball season and such. And he's a little frustrated because Julius Randle hasn't been playing yet for a while. And he asked me the other day, he's like, Dad, when is Julius Randle going to be back on the court? He last played at the end of January, and he's got a shoulder separation, and I was reading a little bit, or dislocated shoulder, but you mm-hmm. know, obviously the potential for a re-injury. So if Hudson's listening right now on his way to school, Austin, what would you tell him? Like a couple months yet, or playoffs potentially?
You know, that's a tough one. I mean, shoulder instability is a tricky one. I mean, there are times we're able to get people back very quickly. Like, we reduce a shoulder on the sidelines and they're back in the game. You see that. I mean, for, you know, to bring it to Hunter Dickinson, who had dislocated his shoulder in, I think it was in the Big 12 finals or semifinals. It was some point not that long ago. I was actually watching that game live and saw that shoulder come out. He's going to be back playing. So, I mean, you can get back quickly. It depends on how the shoulder's acting. I mean, some guys... And it depends on the injury pattern and the location of the labral tearing, which is usually what happens with the dislocation. So if people remain stable and they feel like they have good motion and strength, we can get them back pretty quickly. Now, there's always that risk of it coming out again. And as soon as you have a second occurrence, the risk goes way, 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 way up. So often that's really what we use as a guide. So we'll try getting an athlete back. If they keep coming out, then we talk about shutting them down. But you know, there are times where they'll just try to push through the season and say, look, I'll get it fixed in the offseason. We do see that a lot in a lot of sports, that people just try to go through. So to answer the question, it really has to depend on how his shoulder's acting, you know, stability-wise. If it's remaining stable and they're working on strengthening, it should be pretty quickly. If he still has sensations and true instability, it could be, I don't say indefinite, but that sometimes pushes you to saying, look, we need to shut the season down, operate now. And that's probably the algorithm they're working through as we speak.
Interesting. Not to keep going back and forth, but I forgot to mention this with football. And I saw this the other day, earlier this week. So Chase Young signed a deal with the New Orleans Saints. And I was reading some tweets from Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated. And he noted that scans on his neck made it tough to find a suitor. No one would clear him on his physical. The condition was initially found after he had a stinger last year against the Browns in a preseason game. He will have neck surgery tomorrow, which was just a couple days ago over there. So mm-hmm. when you hear, you know, scans on his neck, no one would clear him on a physical, a condition that was found after a stinger. Does that kind of say like herniated disc or anything like that, or what could be some possible issues with that?
Yeah, that likely that's what it is. So he had probably stenosis or narrowing in the neck. And now some people, it can be congenital where like they just have a congenitally narrow area where the spinal cord runs through. So that central stenosis, that's a real hard one. So those are some times that pro athletes just aren't able to keep going because the risk of like a neck injury is really, really high. If this is something you can operate on, because you can't operate on that, you'd have to open up the entire spinal cord, which obviously you could do. You just wouldn't be able to go back and play football. So this is likely a single level that had stenosis, and what happens is your neck in a certain position, it pinches the spinal cord, and that can be dangerous. I mean, those are times where you'll occasionally see like a transient quadriplegia where an athlete gets hit and they look like they're paralyzed, or they have really bad radicular symptoms on arm, like the arm goes completely limp. And then you're worried about that happening again and again. And so that's, I'm sure, what was going on is they definitely have MRIs of his neck, and they can see that narrowing, and they said, look, this is a potential issue. Now, if it's corrected surgically, then that's not as big a deal. The question is I don't know if they did a decompression, meaning they tried to go in and just pluck the disc out, or if they had to do a fusion, which, for example, like Peyton Manning had when he made his comeback. Both those things, you know, can be effective. Obviously, if you have a fusion in the neck of a player like Chase Young and what he does, you're certainly going to be worried about long-term issues there. So it's definitely a complex topic, but I do believe there's a good chance if it was corrected with the decompression, he should hopefully be able to get back and not have issues that persist.
Interesting. I was reading a little bit more here, too. It said apparently the neck condition was a factor in his trade market just this previous season. He said here the Bears weren't comfortable with the scans, but the 49ers were. So, I mean, it sounds like it's a big risk either way to take that player on.
Yeah, I mean, those are ones that just sometimes you don't know how they're going to go. And especially when you're dealing with neck issues, the nerves are involved, and it just makes you hesitant because those things can be absolutely career-ending. So, and now, I mean, players are getting much, much bigger contracts that have guarantees in them. Mm-hmm. And so when teams are investing, I mean, the good old days, when athletes weren't getting those guarantees, it was, I think, easier for teams to take a waiver on them and say, hey, let's just see what happens. Now these guys are getting, especially premier players like this, are getting, I mean, not completely guaranteed, but there's large chunks of these contracts that are guaranteed money or these signing bonuses to open up cap space that if the team loses that bet, then all of a sudden they're feeling that for a couple of years, you know, so it's just a bigger issue.
Yeah, and I think, Packers fans are probably familiar with neck injuries like that, shortening career, Sterling Sharp, you know, Nick Collins and those guys too. So,
absolutely.
He's Dr. Crow, Chippewa Valley Orthopedics and Sports Medicine inside the training room. Doc, we appreciate it. And I know I want to give a shout out too, because I know you've worked with a lot of them over at Sacred Heart. I know it's a sad day today with Sacred Heart closing, and I know you've worked with probably a lot of people over there too. So we're thinking about them, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that a lot of years over there. just looking at the whole scenario, it's obviously tough. And I think we're hoping the community continues to respond. There's a lot of different ways that people are going to have to adapt and change. And we're certainly doing our best. And there's an effort that we're doing on the kind of the private side of trying to get a community hospital started. And so there's a lot of effort by a lot of people, both on the medical side and business leaders. And so it's active, it's ongoing, and we're certainly doing our best to try to fill the void that's certainly going to be felt. But to all the nurses and all the people from top to bottom that worked at Sacred Heart and St. Joe's, we certainly wish you guys all the best, and it's going to be a tough transition for everybody.
Absolutely. So, all right, Austin, we'll enjoy the basketball games this weekend if you got a chance to watch them, and hopefully your bracket doesn't get too busted like mine is already. So
they always do.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll catch up soon, okay?
Sounds good. Take care.
You got it. There you go. Dr. Crow inside the training room, Chippewa Valley Orthopedics and Sports Medicine.